Parkcast, the UK's original theme park podcast.
Welcome back to you, Parkcast Park fans. We are a podcast for theme park fans, and we're here every week talking about things in the theme park world. If you are a bit of a theme park nerd, I think you might quite like it here. I'm Bex, and I'm joined this week by our friend from across the pond, Mark Rosenzweig. Welcome back to Parkcast.
Thanks so much, Bex. Great to be back.
Well, it's your first one of 2026, so it's March already. I thought it was about time that we got you back here.
Yeah, it's for us, it's starting, it's in the middle of the spring break season, and this is normally when I'd actually be traveling over to the UK, whether for work or pleasure. So, yeah, but new, you know, now a co-owner of a business in the industry, and, you know, it's everybody's opening day is coming up. So we're grooving with a bunch of projects, and, you know, hopefully we'll have some time to breathe here sometime in the summer.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, I hope that we do see you back in the UK at some point. Like, it would be great to actually meet up with you in person because we've never done that.
Absolutely.
If you haven't met Mark before, what's your job title?
So I'm a principal and chief business officer at a company called 3DX Scenic. And yes. We're in Cincinnati, Ohio, about 11 and a half miles as the crow flies from Kings Island. Not that I have measured or documented that, but it's close enough that I have a pretty good coaster fix in my backyard here.
You pretty much finish work, don't you, and just leg it down there in open season.
Yeah, I mean, it's everyone has their ways to handle stress. You know, some people use substances. I just go ride the beast a couple times, and it's I'm good.
Works for me. I'm very jealous that you have the option to do that. Mark joined us on Parkcast last year for a few episodes where he was giving us some realistic American theme park road trips that we could do. So if you've not heard that, go and check those out on our previous podcast, because they are really useful if you've ever dreamed of doing a big US theme park road trip but you don't know where to start. Highly recommended that you go and listen to those. But today, off the back of those episodes, I got a comment from one of you which said, could you ask Mark how he found our UK parks and how they compare to his experiences in the US? And I was like, yes, let's do that. That'll be quite interesting, actually, especially as we're just into a fresh new season at UK theme parks with, well, some ups and downs as we get in the world of theme parks. You were last here in the UK 3 years ago.
Almost to the date. I think yesterday we flew over 3 years ago. So we, on that particular trip, it was a little bit condensed because we were visiting family in Rushton. So we started up in Blackpool, then hit Towers for a couple days, and then visited Rushton, the Harry Potter studio tour. And then we spent the rest of our time in central London. So we just returned the car hire and took the Heathrow Express in. So it was not really a park trip, although my wife and my kids had obviously not been to the parks over there. My wife had been to the UK before, but for the kids, it was their first time. So I felt like it was a good intro trip for them to visit some parks. We hung out in the countryside, and then they got their time in London. We did a few West End shows and all the good stuff there.
Do the tourist stuff. You've got to do that.
Absolutely.
So that was their first visit to UK theme parks. You have, of course, been before, and you've done, I would say, most of the theme parks, if not all of them, in this country, and amusement parks. You've been to places like Great Yarmouth, Fantasy Island. You went to Oakwood when it was open. So you're well versed in our theme parks, and obviously very well versed in the US theme parks. So I think you can draw some good comparisons here. Your last visit was 3 years ago, so I don't think a huge amount has changed in that time. Maybe slightly. Maybe we're in a slightly worse position in some respects than we were then, but I think it's a fairly good comparison to make. So we'll take that trip for your Alton Towers trip. Let's start there. Actually, you started at Blackpool, so let's start there. That would make sense.
Sure. Well, I would start off the top, though, that the industry in the UK, it's always been very vast and varied, you know, and I think appropriate for the population base and the fact that you're on an island. So, I mean, there are some people that don't want to go abroad. So, I mean, if you just stay in the UK, you really do have a attraction or theme park for all tastes, if you will. But there has actually been, you know, the industry, it started getting a little stagnant over there. And actually, since our trip, you know, you have Hyperia, you've got several large scale rides that have been installed. So it's actually, you know, further motivated me to come back. But my favorite park in the UK has always been Blackpool Pleasure Beach, just from a personal standpoint. I grew up in New York. I grew up going to Coney Island, New York, and Blackpool is absolutely the Coney Island of the UK. It is not pretentious. It is a play. It's a playground for all classes. Everybody come and have fun. Doesn't matter how much money you have. Doesn't matter what race you are. It just come and have a great time. I just love that seaside atmosphere, the density of attractions and the piers, and just the vibes it has. And the park is. I think I've said this before. It's kind of like if Kennywood and Knoebels and Morey's Piers all kind of came together in one package. Just the sheer density of rides and how they interact with one another. I mean, it's really nothing like it. And when you stay in the Big Blue Hotel or the Boulevard Hotel, we said at the Big Blue, you open your window and there's the Big Dipper,
Yeah.
just rumbling by your room, maybe a meter away. It's just you don't really get that anywhere. So it's a very cool place.
It's so nice to hear you say that, because I think sometimes in the UK, we have the impression that in the US you've got all these amazing theme parks and what we've got can't really compare or live up to it. But there you are saying actually you go to Blackpool and you absolutely love the atmosphere that it's got. And what about the ride lineup? How does it do it for you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of the I don't know at my ripe old age of 50 now, which is hard to say that out loud. I like less about the roller coasters themselves, although I'm a coaster person, obviously. I like a full, well-rounded park experience. I think that's really what does the most for me. If it's just concrete, rubbish bins and coasters, and that's all it is, yeah, I could be entertained for a day, but it's not going to draw me back, like a place like a Blackpool Pleasure Beach, let's say, where everywhere you look, there's kinetic energy, there's entertainment, there's even the food and beverage is good. I love just getting raw oysters and sitting out having a glass of champagne. That's not something you can
And
really do in most
it's
theme parks,
really
and
not. I know
it's a
it's
thing there,
crazy.
right?
Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah.
So if you're just sitting out under the flying machine, and it just it's the vibes. It's from the small details, like the band organ on the Derby Racer, to the dancing fountain show. It's just that it has that energy and that feel that you can't really put into words, really. It's hard for me to put into words, obviously, right now, but you know where I'm going. I mean, it just has that, it gets you excited, and truly something for everyone. And it's built on 42 acres. So I mean, if you want to ride the big one and everyone else is at Grand National on the other side of the park, it's a 5-minute walk. So it's very
Yeah,
easy to get between things.
I definitely appreciate that. Well, now I'm in my 40s, so you're in your 50s, I'm in my 40s, and yeah, a long walk across parks, which we will probably come to very shortly, is not something that I particularly enjoy. Can you remember the first time you rode the big one?
Yes, it was actually on a business trip, believe it or not. We were over there, and I visiting with some of the ownership of the park, with as when I was representing ride manufacturers. So we were meeting with them, and we had lunch up in the restaurant, I think in the casino building. They have
Oh,
like a really
yeah.
nice restaurant up there.
Yep.
And then some of the group was splitting off to go see, I think, a hot ice show, one of the matinees. And the rest of the group, and I was kind of itching because it was my first time there. It's like, can we go ride some stuff? And so it wound up being our last ride of the day. But the most memorable part of it was it had been, typical Blackpool weather, gray, windy, that cold, raw salt air, which adds more to the atmosphere, I think. And we're climbing up the lift hill of the big one, and the sun broke through the clouds. And one of my it was just it like hit me in the face, just almost blinding. And to look out over the vi that vista that I had only ever really seen in photos or video, you see the Blackpool Tower in the back and the South Pier and just the whole town, and it just really overwhelming. Now, of course, the big one has an amazing first drop. The rest of it, it's not the most thrilling coaster. It's a fast ride. It's iconic, and it interacts with so many things. It boggles my mind how that the engineering behind and the design behind that to make that fit and make that work. And here we are, what? I mean, the ride's over 30 years old now, right? If I'm doing my math right. And
Yeah.
it still regularly has one of, if not the longest waits in the park. So it's I think it's earned iconic status for sure.
Oh, absolutely. I think most of us can't imagine a skyline without the big one on it, which It's crazy because you're like, well, is it going to last forever or not? But if it doesn't, then how can you have Blackpool Pleasure Beach without the big one? It's just something that I it crosses my mind occasionally, and I don't know where it's
Well,
going
all
to
the
go.
tr and the retracking they've been doing recently, I think, is investing into its future. So, I mean, they could be buying, each track section in could be buying another 30 years. So,
Absolutely. I guess you'd take Magnum over it though.
yeah, I think from a ride standpoint, Magnum has more the traditional, like the airtime, the janky aero airtime, as I call it, but it's still, both rides are great. They're iconic for their respective countries. And growing up, say in the early to mid 90s, when I was learning about parks and coasters abroad, for me, that being all of Europe mainly, and the big one was one of the first iconic coasters. It was in an article in the New York Times, and then I was fascinated with it. And this is like me on my dial-up modem in 1994, trying to, figure out everything I could. So it's just fun. It's fun to think back to those times. But I love old, not so much, just rides that have character to them, unique. So like the dark ride collection there is really unmatched in the country. But I love the Wallace and Gromit Thrill-O-Matic. I love the Ghost Train. Those are t my two favorite of them. And then just rides like the Steeplechase and Revolution, and which, by the way, Revolution was the first double launch coaster in the UK, even though it sits right next to the ride that was marketed as
I
such.
suppose you're right. Yeah, you are. You are.
And it's been running since the late 70s, but I'll die on that hill. So it just does everything for me. The kids area is great. It's so dense. There's just so much to do, and it's very easy to fill a day, and it's repeatable. So.
Oh, well, I think it's great to hear your views on that. There's a little bit of chatter at the moment, which by the time you're listening to this may or may not have been confirmed, that the Pleasure Beach are looking to bring back paper ride as a sort of option, that they have confirmed that they're offering a new Flex Pass for 2026. They've said it will be a cheaper ticket, which doesn't commit you to riding, but that you will be able to add on rides when you're in the park, which to me sounds like paper ride. We don't know how much that's going to cost at the moment, but I really hope that that gets some people back into the Pleasure Beach who haven't been there for a while to remind them of all the things that you've just said, and the atmosphere
I
that the Pleasure Beach
wish,
has.
yeah, I do wish I could go back in time to when the park was open gate and they had an all day, hand stamp or wristband option, because my understanding was they didn't have a posted closing time. It was very much like Kennywood, where they'd say opening at 11 a.m., closing was dictated by weather and crowd level. So you could be there till midnight, 1 in the morning, at
I've
a
been
lot
there
of the
till midnight.
boardwalks. And yeah, I mean, to me, but we can't talk about Blackpool Pleasure Beach without talking about wooden roller coasters, because it is I don't want to say dying breed, because there are some, a lot of the wood coaster manufacturers are coming out with new product to extend the life of rides. But between Grand National, Big Dipper, I still call it the roller coaster. I know it's the Orange
Yeah,
Street,
no, I do as well.
and Zipper Dipper, I still call it. But and first time, by the way, I rode roller coaster for the first time. It was 2007 or 2008, and it had the original trains that were like riding on a sofa, and there
Yeah,
was
you didn't
no
have the lap
seatbelt.
bar.
There was nothing. You
Just the
just
grab
rode. It was
handle.
amazing. But I love all of them. I will say my favorite is the Big Dipper. I know most of the purists lean towards Grand National. It's a little bit, for me, a little rough around the edges, but it's a great ride with the interactivity and the racing. But the Big Dipper, I am fascinated with the double lift hill that uses the same chain lift. The actual chain is one chain, because the hills, how they're stacked, just an ingenious design that I'm fascinated from the nerdiest of ways in. And I love how it interacts with everything. And you get down on the south end of the park, where you have Big One, Steeplechase,
Icon
Icon,
as
and
well,
Big Dipper all running together. And I love that. Can't be beat.
It is fantastic. I always remember a documentary back in the 90s, and Doris Thompson was being interviewed, and she was talking about when the Big Dipper opened, and I think it was her Was it her father who'd opened it or her husband? I can't quite remember. And talking about how much that he charged per ride on the Big Dipper. And everyone's like, oh, that's really expensive in the time. And she said, yes. But he said, I'm giving them a mahogany desk to pay for their ride and a terrazza entrance floor. So it's worth it. And I wish we still had those now. That would be amazing, wouldn't it? This like very grand plaza where you go and join the queue for the Big Dipper. But just an absolutely legendary attraction to
About
do.
Valhalla,
Oh yeah.
because oh my God, I don't know why this ride exists in the UK. Because
Especially in Blackpool.
yeah, where I visited in August with sideways rain and temperatures of 5 degrees, and still a 45-minute queue for this thing. Outside of the Orlando or Southern California markets, for my money, it is the greatest water ride on planet Earth. Now, take it. I have not been to Fantasialand, so I have not ridden Chappas. I know that that oftentimes gets
It's
that review,
yeah,
but
it's not the
the
same.
sensory overload, because it is like the best of a water ride and a dark ride in one. And this was Geoffrey Thompson's Y2K vision ride, right? Like this was the ride that was replaced. It was put on the site of the old funhouse. And lived up to all of the hype. It is just bananas, like in the best way, where you go from these hot rooms to these freezing rooms to this double dip drop with
The Ring
water
of
cycling around
Fire.
you and fire, and just come off the thing like you just jumped in a pool and in Blackpool. And I don't know. It is just, I adore it up, down, and all around. It's probably my overall favorite ride in the park, maybe my favorite ride in the country.
Wow. Again, I think it's something we take it for granted because it is there. And last year, and I think we're going to see the same this year, very limited opening hours for it, just opening in the afternoons. It's clearly cost so much money to run that attraction,
Yeah.
and they'd rather have it running for a tight amount of hours, a big queue, get everyone on it, and then leave it off, whether that's the right
Sure.
thing to do or not as a park guest. I don't know, but it obviously is what they need to do as a park, and I think we do take it for granted just how good it is. When you get a good run on it and everything, 90% of things are working in it. It is phenomenal. It's unbelievable that it was built in Blackpool Pleasure Beach, actually. Guess you haven't ridden it then since the full refurb on it.
No,
But
my
you've got
last
that, so you're
ride on it
40.
was in, I think, 2019, because it was down when we went in 2022. So,
Yeah. Oh well, you'll have to come back and do that and get your thoughts on the new Valhalla with its new soundtrack by my friend Glenn, which we
awesome.
absolutely love. Okay, well, I think that's really interesting to get your thoughts on Pleasure Beach. Anything else there that you want to just point out or that stands out to you that you want to get in? I guess this was, like you say, your wife and your kids' first time there. So what did they think of it?
They loved it. And I guess we're going to talk about Alton Towers next, but I can't think of another 1-2 park punch where the parks are more different from one another, not only in what they offer, but the settings, the history, all of that. And for, it's usually flip a coin, which park do you want to visit, or which is the better park? And truly, that was the case for my family. They both, because of me and my nerdiness, they get dragged to a lot of theme parks and all that. And my youngest son loves it. My wife and my daughter tolerate it, I would say. But they both loved it. And I always say this: when you travel abroad, you travel somewhere else, many people will say, "Oh, you're going to a theme park? Why would you do that?" Visiting a theme park is kind of like visiting a city park, a municipal park, where you're surrounding yourself in an environment you're familiar with, in an area or a geographic area that you're not familiar with. So you get to kind of gauge the culture, and you can see, how people do these things. And I just love that. But anyway, they love both parks, I would say, equally, for very different reasons.
That's very good to hear. Okay, like you say, let's move on to Alton Towers, which was your next visit on your next park on your visit a few years ago. A park you've been to before. This was your wife and kids' first visit there. A park which is getting so much attention, not all of it good at the moment. And again, a park that a lot of us elder enthusiasts, I would say, are constantly thinking, I wish it was like it used to be. And we are desperate for some of that magic to come back and find its way back, and a more consistent park experience. But for you as a guest who doesn't get to visit very often, how did you find it?
I'll say one thing off the top is that I think the experience is going to vary greatly depending on the guest that is going. If you are a family driving from Scotland, let's say 4 or 5 hours away, and this is your one time to visit a year, I get the disappointment if you show up to the park and a certain ride's not open. And these things are machines, things happen. We all know that. And I think it's also important to say that the industry and the world in general today is very different than the world it was just 25 years ago. And this isn't making excuses up. It's more pointing out reasons. Supply chains, budgets, all these things are just not what they were 20 years ago. So it's easy to point your finger at a wall and yell at something and say, "This is how I would do it." It's a lot harder when you're sitting behind a desk and you're managing a park and looking at all the numbers and adjusting the levers. So I will say that I get the pain point that everything should run at a park when it opens from a closed season, but it's also one of these, you don't know everything until you know everything. So a lot of people don't know what they don't know. So I give grace where possible. I will say also, staying on property changes a lot. And I've stayed at all of the accommodation on Alton Towers property, the Alton Towers Hotel, the Splash Landing Hotel, and what is the village called where
The
those
Enchanted
standalone?
Village.
Exactly. Yeah. And that one I actually prefer. I like having like a separate unit and just being able to walk and utilizing the gate into Forbidden Valley is a game changer. Because it's a mile walk to get up to Tower Street. However, we also started staying at a place called the Chain Oak B&B, which is across Farley just down the road. And you have to drive and pay for parking. It's not part of the park, but that was another great option. So I think staying there put a lot less pressure on us, even on those 10 to 4 opening days, because we can kind of come and go as we please and knew that we had multiple days. So I just get that out of the way, because I think the big challenge with Alton Towers as a first-time visitor or a visitor coming once or twice a year is you may have 6 hours to do the whole park, and that's basically enough time to do one lap around the park, even if queues are short. But getting that out of the way, I think the biggest I would say the pluses for Alton Towers Coaster Collection, it's iconic. You have so many of these rides that have been marketed brilliantly through the years, and people just know them. And people cosplay as the Smiler. I mean, I don't know another regional park coaster that people dress up like the coaster.
That's very valid, actually.
They do merchandising, right up there with Cedar Point, I would say, where every coaster truly is its own brand. And you're looking for anything from a shot glass to a t-shirt to a poster, you're going to find it in Towers Trading. So you have that, right? I think the imbalance, and I think that this is what either is now or will have to be addressed, is the imbalance in what demographic, you have a lack of marquee family rides. You have Runaway Mine Train, you've got Congo Rapids, you have I guess I would put 13 in that category, maybe Spinball, and even
Maybe
Wicker Man is a
Hex.
family ride. Yeah, Hex too. Hex is iconic, and Alton Manor. But a log flume, which sadly was taken out, that would be a great addition at this park. They just it I think right now the park is struggling because they have a lot of high-tech rides. Some of them are getting near the end of their life, potentially, because some of these rides are over 30 years old now. You saw Nemesis get complete retrack. But we're also looking at this from a standpoint of they need more rides, because what happens at a park like this, when one major ride goes down, it cascades the whole system. So, I mean, everyone floods away and goes to the rides that are open, blowing up the queue lines there. And it's just like this guest experience issue that tends to happen. So I can't speak to a lot of the, I've heard also with food and beverage has been challenging as well, but
That's one word for it.
yeah, but I mean, the park is in an unbeatable setting. It's on royal grounds. The gardens are absolutely worth exploring, even on a 6 hour day. Take 30 minutes out of your time and wander down. I mean, they're just these unmarked pathways that never in America, we would never have something like that here. And just the sheer size and beauty of the property, there's nothing really like it with the towers in the middle. I do miss the days where you could just wander freely through the towers. You could just go up on the roof, and now I guess it's part of a upcharge tour. And some days they have certain areas of it open, but it used to be you could just walk in. From my first visit, I remember that. Like, I'm on the roof watching the Smiler operate, and then said, "This is amazing." So, I think in the end of the day, the park itself, the ownership knows what they have there, and I think the fans of the park really love this place, and they defend it at all costs. I see online, and that's because they love it, and rightfully so. It's a unique asset to the UK. You know, there's no theme park like it in the world. It very much is like an Efteling of the UK, and my hope is that, you know, it can reach its true potential, because it is a remarkable park in its current state as it is right now. And we know its potential because I've been visiting since 2007 or so, and I know you've been visiting probably into the
Since
90s,
the
right?
early
So
90s,
yeah. So I mean, we all know what it was, and maybe everything can't be what it was, but we know the potential is there. So I'm pretty confident it'll return to that, especially with Universal entering the chat here in a few years. So.
I think for me that the couple of things that I'd like to see change swiftly would be, as you say, like ride density, get some more flat rides in there. It's so lacking in flat rides. It's kind of crazy for the size of the park, and you compare it to Efteling, and you look at what Efteling have got in terms of ride density, and it is like it's a crazy disparity. So there's that, and then getting on top of these maintenance issues, which we are seeing now as a recurring trend, not just at the start of the season, and it's a problem at the start of the season, but these issues plagued the park all last season as well. It follows them around, and it's like they're at the bottom of the Travelator on the Gladiators, and they just can't like get a grip on it and kind of get back on top. The monorail and the sky ride issue right now, I think, is huge. I think to have one of those transport rides down is absolutely fine. These things are going to happen. The sky ride needed a load of maintenance, and they did it, and great. Well, make that investment in that piece of hardware. But the fact that it's now down again, less than a year later, is, I think that's a challenge as a guest. I think it's a challenge as a guest if you've got a young family like I have, and I think it's a challenge if you have disabilities. It's not an easy park to get around without that infrastructure in place. And I think we did without it for 2 years, going, okay, well, that's fine. They're gonna, 2 years without it means we get a lot more years with it. And I think that it's just a bit of a sting, a bit of salt in the wound when it then doesn't open now. And then you've got the monorail compounding it, because that's down as well. So you start your day with probably a long walk, unless you are a Platinum Pass holder and you can go in and use that Galactica Gate with the hotel guests.
Some point they probably need to look at making the Forbidden Valley entrance more of a main
I think
gate.
so. Yeah, I think
You
so.
know, put actual turnstiles up there, so that it could be used all day. Another thing that could benefit too is looking at, I don't know what governs their operating hours there. You know, how a 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. day could ever be a thing at a park that vast. I don't know if it's budgets. I don't know if it's local ordinances, because you know there is, I know with the Halloween Scarefest, they have limited amount of days that they're allowed to stay open that late. That's what I was told way back when, and that's why they do it then. And they have these Alton After Dark weekends, the first 3 weekends, I think, right? But maybe doing my takeaway was, okay, we closed the park at 4. We went and had dinner at the roller coaster restaurant. That took us to about 5:15, 5:30, and now we're in the middle of nowhere with nothing to do. Because even the mini golf closes. They really, I feel like for the on-site guests to look for more things, maybe open the water park from 4 p.m. to 10 p.m.,
Oh,
something
it would
like
be a
that.
dream.
You know, so you have something to do after the theme park closes. Because when they have them open at the same time, no one's
No one's
going
in there.
to break away from a 6-hour operating day to go to the water park.
No.
And then maybe doing some more either open early for hotel guests, or stay open a little late, like certain areas or certain rides, you know, just to add a little more value to that, or Platinum Pass holders, for example. It's not like Blackpool, where, okay, Pleasure Beach, I wish it was still up until 10, but they close at 5 or 6 or 7 most nights. The piers could be open till 10 or midnight, so there's still things to you can walk down the prom and go do. I think that was my takeaway with being there with my family with kids, because they're ready to go and do more things, and there wasn't anything else to do, so we just went back to our room.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point. And the hotels themselves used to have a lot more entertainment in the evenings. When they first opened, there was quite a big program of entertainment that has been chipped away at, sadly. And one of the things that John Wardley said when we spoke to him last year was that one of his regrets was that he didn't push harder for an entertainment style theatre in the hotels when they opened, because the thinking was everyone, all the guests were going to be too tired after a day at the theme park. No one would want entertaining. And he said once they opened the hotels, it quickly became clear that that wasn't the case at all. And actually, people were ready for more, but they didn't have any infrastructure to be able to do it. So yeah, valid points. And I think it's interesting that you make the observation about the water park, which is something that theme park enthusiasts in this country say a lot as well. We cannot understand why that water park isn't open in the evenings. I mean, almost don't open it in the day. If it's a staffing thing or a cost thing, just keep it closed in the day and just have it as an evening thing. But yeah, it's so sad because you sit in the Splash Landings Hotel and you look out over there and it looks beautiful in the evening. Like the lighting in there is stunning. It looks so inviting and yeah, you can't go in it.
And I will say, if we're going to talk the coasters in the park real quick, it's a very well balanced lineup. Kind of like Kings Island down the street from me. There's not a single top tier coaster. I don't have anything that I would say, oh my gosh, this is the world's best in this category. But there's also really nothing I would walk past and say, oh, I wouldn't ride that. It's a very well balanced collection. I think there are some rides that are overrated. I think there are some rides that are underrated.
Oh, go on, tell us. What do you think's overrated?
I think Nemesis is the most overrated coaster that I maybe have ever ridden. Now, this
No.
is to say, before everyone gets all upset at America Boy, this is to say it's a fantastic ride. I love the layout. I love the implementation. I love how it interacts with the rock work and all that. It just was sold to me like this is the greatest inverted coaster in the world, and it's not even the best inverted coaster for me in the country. And that's a very controversial
Really?
statement too.
What do you think
I
is
prefer
Inferno?
Nemesis Inferno. I think Nemesis
Oh.
Inferno is a better ride.
Oh.
Now, mind you, this is because it was overhyped to me, and Nemesis Inferno was underhyped. And when you have
Right.
the, it's called anticipointment, is the made up word. Now, there are other rides in the park, like 13, I think is brilliant. I think it's one of the best family coasters out there. It does a little bit of everything, and I love how it's setting in the woods. I'm not going to call it Galactica, even though I said that, but Air is another vastly underrated coaster. I'm not a huge flying coaster fan. I don't like the pretzel loops that make you feel like your body's going to collapse in on itself. And this one is just gliding. It's scenic. It does a little bit everything. Don't worry. I like Nemesis more than Air, but I'm just saying from that aspect of underrated, overrated, it's
Yeah.
important to state that Wicker Man's a very solid, one of the best family wooden coasters in the world. Smiler is. It's an enigma, right? It's its thing. I get sucked in just from the storyline and the theming and the soundtrack, and I can appreciate all that. And even Oblivion, you look at that ride. It's one drop, get off. But what it does really well. And
Yeah.
again, it's a lot of it is the marketing. It's the one-liners. It's the don't look down, join
Yeah.
us,
Yeah.
all that. So it's prepare for Air. I remember that way back in the
Yeah,
day. So,
sit back, it's
just
fright
it's a great.
time. That was Nemesis.
I haven't done Curse at Alton Manor, but I did it when it was Duel and just Haunted House, and I think that's a vastly underrated dark ride. It's long, it's got a lot to look at. When everything's working, it really is one of the best rides in the park. Super high capacity, never has more than a 15-minute queue. And Hex, Legend of the Towers, I think that is the single best madhouse in the world.
Oh,
I can't think
really?
of another one that I like better. I love how you feel like you're in the Towers building the whole time. The queue line and the pre-shows are the ride. The show building is kind of painted in that go away green and hidden out back. But I adore that attraction, top to bottom. And sadly, in 2022, when we were last there, it was down. It was the start of the year or two of its struggles. But absolute gem in that park. So. Way more good than bad. I think that's the important thing to say. And
Yeah.
we know the potential there. And the UK is very lucky to have that park. And it's a great location because it pulls from every area of England, Wales, Scotland. So
Yeah. It's so interesting to get your thoughts on it because, like I say, we do. I think every country, wherever you live, you will take your local park kind of for granted, and you get so used to the coasters that they become very like, meh. So I do think it's really interesting to hear from someone who doesn't ride them all the time and your take on it. In terms of other parks in the UK, what really has stood out for you on your visits, or what do you think that we don't sort of rate as highly as we should, or that maybe we overrate?
Blackpool and Alton Towers are the two that are going to get all most of the attention, but the theme parks around London I'm fascinated with, and I love the direction Merlin took, where they strategically, starting in about 2002 when Colossus was introduced at Thorpe Park, they determined that Thorpe Park was going to be the thrill park and Chessington was going to become the family park. Because if you recall, they were flipped
Yeah.
before that. Thorpe Park was the family park and Chessington had Samurai, the top scan, and had more thrilling rides. And I love that they have Chessington, they have Legoland, and they have Thorpe. All three parks, completely different, audiences. I guess Chessington and Legoland could have crossover, but you have a Merlin annual pass and you live in the London area down there. You have those three parks in your backyard. That's golden to me. I love, not having the same thing. Thorpe Park. It is very, it doesn't pretend to be anything it's not. It's a raw thrill park. It targets teens, it targets families with older kids, and it is the best thrill park in the UK. I mean, there's no way around that. It has I have not done Hyperia yet, but the combination of the Swarm, Nemesis Inferno, Stealth, there's just some really solid thrill rides there. And they also have a considerable amount of flat rides. They have that one area
Yeah.
kind of just adjacent to Colossus, where you've got four or five flat rides
Yeah.
all in one area, all different types of Scream and Swing and Enterprise, one of those Chance KMG Revolutions. So, I mean, yeah, for me, I could spend 3 or 4 days down there hopping between those parks. Chessington, I can't speak to their new additions that are more IP based, but when I last visited in 2019, I mean, it just has so much charm, right? And a very loyal audience. And I got to stay in the hotel, the safari themed hotel. And I'm like, this is great. We're not even, 20 miles from central London. And I'm looking at giraffe out my hotel room. I just love, vampire, go down the list of rides there. I love, is it Dragon's Fury, the Mauer spinning coaster there?
Yeah.
Probably my favorite free spinning coaster I've ever been on. Just a brilliant layout. I understand that and Spinball went in the same year or in
Yeah, it
back to
was like
back
a
years.
joint like package that they
Right.
bought. Yeah.
Spinball's a custom layout, but it feels a little more like any Mauer spinner. But Dragon's Fury just it has a I think it has a mid-course lift hill, if I'm remembering correctly. And it goes all over the place. And you really have no idea where you are. That's great. And that's the park that has, I would say right now, the last great classic log flume left, Tiger Rock, with the Mach
Yeah.
Flume, where we're
Yeah.
going up the final lift and I'm looking at, there's the Shard. You could see central London, just awesome.
Yeah.
Great mix of family rides. I love all that. Legoland is it's a good park. I spent a half day there when I was there the one time. It's got most of the, I'll call it, greatest hits of other Legoland parks with some unique ones. The Flying Theater I think is unique for a brand. I love the dragon there. It's a very old, I think it was made by some a company and only did three or four coasters. It's not a typical Zier or Vekoma dragon coaster like most of the other Lego parks have. And it's fascinating that I guess it was a zoo park at one time, a zoological park, and built on that hill where you walk in and Windsor Castle's right in front of you. And then you
Yeah.
can walk down or take the hill train down. And they've since added the Zier family shuttle coaster since I was last there.
Oh
So,
yeah. Yeah, I think these parks are they've got the potential to be great parks, and you can also have a terrible day. It's one of those that it depends when you time your visit. You go to Legoland in the school summer holidays, you're not getting on very much at all. You're spending a long time
right.
in queues, and it's not a great experience. Go now during the week, you'll probably have a great
Yeah.
time. And it's It's just a bit inconsistent as a guest, and it's every theme park's going to get busy in the school summer holidays, of course it is. But these Merlin parks just seem to struggle with it a little bit more, probably because of their closeness to London. And like you say, how many people live so close to these three theme parks who can pick up a Merlin pass and go and ride them all every weekend? You know, it's I would, but yeah. it does mean that they do get quite densely packed out. I think Chessington's a really interesting one. Again, there's a lot of nostalgia for a lot of enthusiasts in this country for the world of adventures, which it was, and it was adventures, not IP adventures. It now is going to be the world of IP adventures. I think there's no doubt in that. We've had Minecraft confirmed, Paw Patrol's opening very soon. You've got World of Jumanji. That's the way that park is going. It's obviously what they think they need to do to compete with Universal coming down the line. And I hope it works for them. I hope it works for them. I think we know IPs can really pay off, or they can sink.
If they're done right, you know, an example of done right is Thomas Land at Drayton Manor. Right from the beginning when that opened, I'm going back to 2008 or so, it was such a runaway success, you know, right from the onset. And everyone was commenting, said, well, I guess this means the rest of the park has to get upgraded, because this area looks so incredible, because it literally was like, I always compared like the best theming to Hogsmeade at Islands of Adventure, Universal Studios Hollywood.
Wow.
No, seriously, when you walk in and all of the landmarks are where they are in the film. So you're familiar with all that. So when you walk into Thomas Land, and mind you, I have not been back since they added phase two. So it was just that opening phase. Back in 2008, the Troublesome Trucks coaster was there, and you know, the Cranky the Crane Tower and those type of things. But they have since doubled the size of it, and home run, like runaway hit for them. Let's talk about Drayton, though, by the way, because I'm thrilled with what the Looping Group has done with that place. Sometimes I'm all for a family owned park. Some of my favorite parks, Knoebels, Lagoon, you name it, family owned, because Blackpool, another great example. They have a vision, they can execute it as long as the finances make sense. Sometimes it's challenging because you're in a place like Drayton, you think they're in between Alton Towers and Chessington and Lego for that family park competition right outside of Birmingham. And you have a corporate group come in with a vision and the finances to execute. And I love the direction. I don't love that Apocalypse went away. One of the best all-time drop rides.
But Goldrush is a great coaster.
I haven't ridden it, but it that was the ride the park needed. And that just refreshing the area around Shockwave, turning it to the Wave and adding that Wave Swinger and painting and freshening up, maintaining the zoo, which is a really great asset to that property. Nice way to get away from the crowds and, you know, spend an hour out there. Probably overall the most underrated park in the UK, I would say, is Drayton Manor. It's just people don't talk about it enough. And just again, love what the Looping Group has done in there. It's been fantastic.
Yeah.
Overall, my opinion on UK parks is that they serve their part, their purpose, you know, like for the population, there's a park for every demographic. And I have not been to Paulton's Park, and that will get resolved on my next trip.
Oh, yeah, you need to do that. Because
they're going in big right now.
Yeah.
But I'm a Seaside Park fan, you know, really. And I love the UK seaside resorts, whether it's Great Yarmouth, Clacton, Brighton, Southend. Like these parks, you get creative. This kind of goes back to, I know I said Nemesis was overrated, which it is, but it's a great ride. So there, I said everything in one, politician. But why is that ride so great? And I'm sure John Wardley has either said this or would agree with this. If you have a big open flat pasture and a bunch of money, anyone could design a ride. That's not a challenge. But hey, here's the challenge. We can't go above the tree line. We're going to blast into the ground, make a ride that's interesting. Okay, so perhaps Nemesis is a result, and the success of it is a result of the challenges in the creative and engineering side. Same thing holds true with seaside parks. When you're dealing with real estate that could be, you know, £500,000 an acre in value, you have to get creative because every square inch has to make money. You don't have a choice. You can't swing and miss, as we would say in baseball. You know, you have to be strategic. You have to make sure that everything is seen to. So when I see a park like Adventure Island in Southend, wow, You talk about kinetic energy, everything is going. You got coasters all over the place. It's almost like a miniature Blackpool Pleasure Beach. Just, that to me, that gets me excited when I see that and see the success, and people, and because everyone, I'm assuming in the UK, everyone has their seaside resort that they go to, and that's where they go every year, and they have the same hotel room, and it happens in the States too, or they rent the
Maybe
same
a
cottage,
little
or they,
bit. Yeah.
yeah. No, but it's tradition, right? And family. So I mean, some people go to Great Yarmouth every year, and that's where
Yeah.
they go. And they grew up with Joyland and Pleasure Beach and Great Yarmouth, and it's
Yeah.
great, because I love going. Ultimately, I'm a super fan of the industry, but I'm a super fan of the business of the industry. And when I see it thriving and making money for the operators, but also providing joy and value for the guests, that's what drives me. That's what gets my juices flowing
Yeah.
overall.
That's really cool. And you've mentioned before to me Fantasy Island, which is down the road from me here. And what's interesting to me is that that's a park, a seaside park, which has obviously been bought by Showman, and they've bought Fantasy Island and kind of invested in that. And now they've bought Lightwater Valley, which was always a out and out theme park. It's in the middle of a very green, lush valley in Yorkshire,
Yeah.
and they've kind of done each step so that you've gone travelling fairground, seaside amusement park. Now let's try our hand at an actual theme park, and I think that that's going to be interesting to see where they go with that and what investment we see at
And
Lightwater
multiple
Valley.
places they could place their rides, like the
Yeah.
Mauer Spinner that's opening at Lightwater,
Yeah.
that could be any number of places. And I got the 2016 on a trip. We haven't talked about Flamingoland yet, but
We
I
haven't.
did. I spent a day. I had one spare day. I was driving from Blackpool to Great Yarmouth. That's pretty far.
That is a long way.
I did not know how far it was until I was halfway through it. But I spent the night in Leeds, and I did Lightwater and Flamingoland on the same day. Both parks were open 10 to 5, but I figured I'm never going to get back here. I didn't know when the next, because it's pretty far north from
Yeah.
London. And so glad I was going to just pass on Lightwater and go to Flamingoland because they have more density of rides, but I really wanted to ride the Ultimate, and I'm really, really happy I did that.
Yeah.
What an enigma of a ride and such a sad loss. And I
Yeah.
know it's a hate, love it or hate it thing, but
There'll never be another.
no, I mean the first portion was fine, but when you drop off, 18 minutes later, you're finally dropping off that second lift hill. Holy, like it just all hell breaks loose. And I learned on my first ride, don't sit towards the front because the front of the train took the brunt of those
Yeah.
interestingly profiled turns, we'll call it to be diplomatic. The back of the train, at least you were able to let the people up front take the punishment. You could just kind of ride along, but racing along, there's sheep over here, and
At
I've
parks,
heard
you're like
stories,
2 foot off the
yeah.
ground, aren't you? Like for
Well, I
ages.
heard stories that sometimes you'd see, let's say, undergarments on the handrail going up the second lift hill because I didn't see them that day, but I've heard stories from some people that had gone there
What?
to look for that. Yeah.
Oh
So,
no.
yeah.
Well.
But yeah, I mean, I actually really like Lightwater. That was one of I don't know if it was the last year, but I think the Ultimate ceased to operate. When COVID hit, right? So
Yeah.
the park was really beautiful. I love that. It was sort of like mini Alton Towersville with a lot of open green space
Yeah.
and just a good mix of rides. I love the I think it was called not the Rat, it was called Dino something.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was going to
It had
say
been
the rat was
rethemed.
iconic.
Yeah, and that ride is now in Austin, Texas at Coda Land.
Oh, is
They
it?
bought that Wildcat. Yeah, it operates outdoors now, so they painted it up nice, and because it was just painted black to be in the show building. But
Yeah.
that queue line was crazy. You're like ducking to get through. I just couldn't believe it, and I'm just thinking, I always think back to this would never happen in America, but and then you have Flamingoland. So again, like when I say the UK has a park for every taste and demographic, I'm in Flamingoland, and it really had vibes of Busch Gardens Tampa for me, because you have this big wide
Interesting.
open savanna with animals, and then off in the distance, I'm drawing a blank on the Vekoma SLC there,
The
the
Kamali.
Kamali, okay, which was a shockingly smooth SLC. I don't know why, but that particular one, because that dates back. That wasn't the Vekoma we know now that builds flawless coasters. That was a time, I guess they put in that and the motorbike coaster the same year. That was part of their rebranding after all the funfair rides like the Schwarzkopf Triple Loop had left. But I like the park a lot. I was there on a very quiet day, so I can't speak to operations or capacity. It seemed like a lot of rides running one train or pretty
That
low
is
capacity
common.
rides.
And
Right.
unfortunately, even on a busy day, that is quite common at Flamingoland. I think it is the UK's most expensive theme park, in terms of ticket price.
Okay.
It's a
Good for
tricky
them.
one for me, Flamingoland. It's one that I think should be a lot better than it is. We are seeing some changes there. There've been some ride removals, so something big might be coming, maybe we can hope. I think they've got a lot of potential. I think that they've got, you might c compare it to Busch Gardens. Let's get an RMC in there, lads. Let's do it. That would be awesome. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see where that one goes. It's never one that's on my list of a park that I want to go and kind of visit. Just for me, with my daughter, the age she is, it's not there. There's nothing to take me there. I'd rather go and spend money somewhere else. But I mean, it's interesting that you quite liked it as a
I
guest.
was surprised how big it was. I
Yeah,
wasn't
that's the
prepared.
thing.
I would, if I'm guessing, it's larger in size than Thorpe Park, acreage wise. Like it is a sizable park. And just the amount of, again, I like having multiple layers of offerings. So having the zoo experience coupled with thrill rides. They had a dark ride, if I remember correctly. They had that weird water ride that is about to finally reopen from refurbishment. It's like a big splashdown ride with
Well, it
some,
was a big
like a,
splashdown ride,
now
and now
it's
it's quite a
not.
small splashdown ride. But it would be
Just a
interesting to
really,
see what
really good mix of stuff. And I think the addition of Sick a couple years ago, even though that
they
ride took a journey from Europe to Brazil to the UK. And I could say it's a little bizarre that two 10 looping coasters exist in the same country, but I think they're far enough apart. It's like there's, in the US there are parks with Vekoma boomerangs that are closer. So I mean it's, I guess from that standpoint, the same thing. I don't think
Yeah,
the
it's smoother than
average.
Colossus. The thing that puts me off genuinely is its name. I don't want to say it. It's horrible.
Is there, is that a sponsor? I don't really
Yeah, it's a
understand.
sponsor. It's a clothing brand, which I have to say I've never seen anyone wear, but that might be because I'm not down with the kids. It's a clothing sponsorship, and I find that bizarre as someone who's worked in sponsorships. And on both sides, selling them and also, signing them off for my brands, I can't understand how that one ever got across the line, but it did. I just think it's bizarre to
Maybe one of
call
the
your roller
owners of the
coaster that.
park also owns a share of the clothing company. Maybe we need to look
Possibly,
into that.
you
I
could
don't
be
know.
right. I just find it bizarre why it wouldn't at least have a name and then just be like brought to you by Sick if you had to or something like that. I still think putting that word next to a roller coaster is just a terrible idea. But hey, what do I know? Mark, I think it's been really interesting to get your thoughts on all of this. So I think the conclusion is your experience of UK parks has actually been pretty positive.
I would say fairly positive. Most of my visits have occurred about this time of year. So while schools are in session, so I've had a lot of quiet weekday visits to places like Alton Towers and Thorpe Park, where 10 minutes was the longest queue time. So I may be jaded in that regard.
No, well, just timed it well. But yeah, I think it's good because I think, God, imagine if you'd come over here and you had your little theme park tour planned of UK parks and just everyone you went to was like, no, that's down, that's got really long queues, that's got a staggered opening. I think, that wouldn't be a great guest experience. So I think
But Bex, it's important though to note that this isn't unique to the UK. This is a thing happening. Now, yes, there are parks that run like clockwork, like Kings Island here. They're going to open in about 3 weeks' time, and I fully expect all ride vehicles on all trains. That's just the way they are. But there are other parks that, for whatever reason, the market they're in, staffing, budgets, it could be any number of things, and not everything is ready to open opening day. And
No.
it's just a thing. Not every place is Europa Park and Efteling, and
Ugh.
they have the resources, right? And they put the effort towards that. You and I are in the industry, I'll say. We're fans of the industry and we're in the industry, and yet we're not privy to a lot of what goes on behind closed doors, and we don't know, the timing of it. When people say, well, there's a 4-month off season, everything should be running. Maybe there's a reason they don't start until January for it. Maybe they're, fiscal year, or there could be any number of things. So but we don't know. That's really what it is. But as I said, everyone, you vote with your wallet and your feet. I mean, if you don't like a business that could, let's go outside of amusements. You don't like a pizza place. If you keep going back there and getting pizza and complaining about how much you don't like it,
Very
I
fair.
don't need
Yeah,
to say
very
anything
valid.
else, right?
Yeah,
So.
absolutely. You mentioned on podcast last year, one of the big projects you were working on was this giant nutcracker for Lagoon Park. It's about time that it gets unveiled, isn't
I think so. Yeah,
it?
I'm heading out there on Friday. Myself and one of my colleagues here from 3DX will be at the park for opening day on Saturday. So really, really excited to celebrate with the park team. It was a monumental project for us, because we're just a little humble custom fabrication shop here in Cincinnati. But we're very proud with how it turned out. The park is thrilled with it, and it'll be great to celebrate with the SNS team and the Lagoon team, on a job well done. So yeah.
How tall is it? Remind us.
48 feet. So it was built in three sections, here in Cincinnati, shipped in three sections, and then the week of March 9th, it was installed. So it was about a 5-day all-in installation. So, and that was with a lot of moving parts, because it's a construction site. You've got a lot of contractors, and SNS is trying to commission the ride at the same time. So there's a lot of, ride cycling happening while we're trying to fly parts of a nutcracker. And I sound like I'm making this up, but that's my life. So
Oh, you should have time-lapsed it. That would have been great to see.
I if the park did it, I will definitely get the footage and I'll send it over to you.
Yeah, do that. Okay, well, that sounds great. As always, Mark, it's been great chatting to you on podcast. I know you could be back here later on in the year. We'll find something to chat to you about. If you haven't already, hit subscribe so that you never miss an episode of podcast. And if you'd like to leave a review, you can do that as well. For now, though, we've been podcast.
Podcast. The UK's original theme park podcast.